right. Well, today we're here with Real Freedom, and we've got a wonderful guest here to help us out. We've got Eric Peterson, and Eric's going to share a little bit about his journey. And, you know, the whole point of these interviews is to be able to give a real life example of a real life person working their way towards financial freedom and what that looks like. So for those of you watching, just to be able to have a path to see, here's what one person's doing. If you ever want to reach out to Eric with questions or reach out to me, I can put you guys in touch. But we want people to see, here's real people doing it and here's how they're doing it. So hopefully that can inspire you and help you on your journey. So Eric, if you want to just give a little bit of a background about you and what you're up to.
Yeah, so thanks for the intro, Mike. My name is Eric Peterson. I am the owner of the Peterson & Co. Real estate team at Keller Williams here in Otsego and Buffalo, Minnesota. And been an agent since 2006. I like to tell people I got into real estate right as the piano was being pushed off the top of the building. It's been a fun opportunity for me to really grind and understand and, you know, really get to know our industry from a time that was very, very troubled, and we get to learn a lot about it. So, you know, more than that, I am the father of three amazing daughters. I also have a wife, Jackie, at home, and a couple of pets as well. So I'm an avid outdoorsman, love to hunt and fish, and, you know, more than anything, just really love the opportunity that we have in front of us as, you know, real estate professionals and controlling our own destiny to help get to a point where I can be financially free. And that's really what it's all about, right?
And too, you know, like I like what you said, you know, the part of it is getting to the end point, but part of it too is doing it with your life intact, right? Because we know there's so many people out there, you know, real estate, there's a lot of opportunity, and people may get to their destination. What happens is they have a trail of collateral damage along the way where it's ruined relationships, ruined whatever it might be. And so what we want to focus is on doing that in a healthy way. And so still being able to be Eric the businessman and also being able to be Eric the dad and Eric the husband, most importantly, first, and Absolutely. Have your life sustainable through this journey.
And Mike, you've seen that as many times as I have, where somebody focuses, you know, solely on their business and leaves, as you said, the collateral damage of their family in the background. Whereas, you know, who you are as a person and who you are as a business owner will run together hand in hand, right? Who you are as a business owner will never outrun who you are as a person. So it's important to keep all of that intact and maintain your health and your relationships and, you know, maintain your mindset around being as good of a person as you can be, and your business will flourish and follow, you know, in the wake of that.
Mm-hmm. So, yep. And we know that this is a long-term journey. You're not going to be financially free within a year or two. For some people that can happen. You know, you might be able to hit the right amount of luck, and yet it is a long journey. So you need to be able to do it in a sustainable way. So,
well, and I think that's important as we talk about, you know, some of the things that we're going to talk about today. It's really important to know that vision of what financial freedom looks like is going to be different to anybody. It's not like a switch that you walk into a room and flip on and then it's financial freedom, right? It's a journey that ebbs and flows and has hardships and has, you know, triumphs and has wins and losses and everything along the way and all the emotions that go with it. But at the end of the day, what we're really talking about is maintaining a vision of something bigger than yourself that can help you and your family and all those people that you care about, you know, in a way that maybe just having a 9-to-5 job couldn't, right? Or may not afford you. So I'm excited to talk about all the ways and that I've been able to, you know, in small increments, begin my journey towards financial freedom. Obviously, right, we're not there yet. And I don't think anybody, you know, I mean, well, not a lot of people that I know are there. And I think if you probably ask people, they don't really even know what there looks like. Mm-hmm. But what we can start to do together through this conversation and, you know, through conversations with, you know, other people within our environment is really start to, you know, wrap our arms around the possibilities and wrap our arms around what opportunities exist and maybe what didn't I think about before that I should be thinking about now to help make the accrual of financial freedom a little bit easier on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great. So digging in a little bit then, if we want to start with the end in mind, like you said, not everybody necessarily has a number or an arrival point, but for you, let's talk about the end a little bit. What is it that you're working towards? What does that look like? Any detail you want to give of the journey? Where's at least the potential end milestone for you?
Yeah, what I found is that when I give myself a hard number, it doesn't allow a lot of flexibility along the way. When I have one thing that I'm focused on, while it may be a good milestone and a good, target to aim at, I found that I don't allow myself a lot of leeway and a lot of opportunities to grow in other areas that might help in my journey, but not necessarily be directly on that road. So for me, I have an end goal of basically in a passive income of $10,000 to $15,000 a month. And the reason that I give that is because I'm not sure at that point, right? I'm thinking somewhere 50, 55. I always told myself I'd be at that point at 50. I'm not sure what will yet to be being paid off by some of the other passive sources. And I'm going to be okay somewhere in there. I don't have this goal of I got to make $1 million a year and it's all got to be passive and I don't have to lift a finger. There's a lot of give and take and there's a lot of, things that you need to look at in your overall position that may still be allowing you to be financially free and yet having other asset sources that might be seen without any other debt as passive income. But if they're paying off other debt, that might allow you to have that grow a little bit more exponentially. I'm allowing myself a little bit of latitude in that. But that's essentially where it ends up.
Yep. Yeah. And it's not like, it's going to be the arrival point of I've hit that number. Now I'm off the grid and completely shut off from society and can never make any adjustments. I think that's the thing too. Like we don't know, there's things within our control and things outside of our control, the stock market, investments, different things like that can come up. It can change things, but there's a period where at least you can take your eye off the ball in some regards in the day-to-day sense, right? Like you're not having to show up and pour and pour and pour in every day. It's now you're just maintaining, right? Yep. You're just kind of watching everything, making sure it's performing the way that you want it to perform. If you need to adjust, if you need to tweak, you can do that, but at least you're not necessarily having to fill up the cup every day with water.
Yep. And that's an income to me. Obviously, things can be very different. If you make 50 grand a year in passive income, but it's serving debt that you have, that's not a point of financial freedom, right? So it's important that, when one side of the scale goes up, the other goes down, and we don't just kind of keep accruing and maintain, trying to maintain that lifestyle as well.
Yeah. Yep. A lot of moving pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So, absolutely. Okay. Fantastic. So why don't you just take a little bit of time then and walk us through. And what I really love about Eric's journey is he's got a few different things that he's added to the backpack along the way. And over time, they've grown a little bit. And for some people, it might be putting your eggs in one basket. It might be putting your eggs in mostly in one or two baskets. It might be you've got a few different eggs in a few different baskets. And the nice thing is, as they start to grow over time, you really start to notice, if this has grown a little bit, this has grown a little bit, and this has grown a little bit. And all of a sudden you wake up and you look and you're like, oh, wow, things have grown a lot. I've built a lot of wealth along the way without really realizing it because you have a few different streams or a few different ponds that you're fishing in. So why don't you just kind of walk through each of those with us?
Yeah. So, Mike, one of the things that I see, people really do and they do it very often is they find themselves being really good in one area and then trying to tackle a completely different area that they think is going to be very lucrative, right? We see it in our industry with people that maybe have a really good sphere business, but now they want to go get really good at tackling expired listings, let's just say, or for sale by owners. Well, the same thing can be true across multiple industries, but you know, where I've found the most benefit is saying, okay, if I'm good at this, if I'm good at, you know, A, whatever A is, how do I make A be A plus 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 plus, right? How do I take A and, you know, make it as big and bad as I possibly can and squeeze the most amount of juice out of what I'm already doing, you know, very well at? So for me, that came in the form of layering opportunities within real estate already. Now, for me, I found that I had a natural affinity towards real estate, and we only have a certain amount of time in our day, and everyone has that same 24 hours. So we looked at it and said, all right, well, how do we go from being a single salesperson, you know, which I was for at least the first two thirds of my real estate career, and start to compound something that we're already doing, right? How do we take that and do it to the X power, right? So what we found is that we have a real estate business already, which is great. From that, we have opportunities to buy rental properties, let's just say. We have opportunities to grow into teams. And what I found is that as my real estate business grew, I needed more leverage in my life so that I could focus on the things that ultimately made me more money. And so when we talk about growth, it's not just we take on more and we take on more and we take on more and we take on more. What we're really talking about is focusing on that top line 20%, right? And continuing to let go of more. Because what you'll find is that as you obtain more responsibilities, and I'm realizing that I'm far more of a hand talker than you are, Mike, but as we take on more of those responsibilities, we have a responsibility to let go of just as much or even more to experience true leverage in our business. So in terms of, you know, building a real estate team, we had our sales, right? So what did we need to do? We have a saying at Keller Williams, success through others, right? Well, I kind of turned that into success with others, because without other people, our success doesn't really mean a lot, right? And my success should not be in spite of someone else or using them as a catalyst. We should take our, you know, as we've talked about, one plus one, and not just be two, but be three, four, five, because now we're harnessing each other's power.
So, and the other thing too, just to quick jump in on that concept is, you know, we talk about, you know, there is a period where, as you're pursuing like a sustainable model towards financial freedom, part of it is, you know, giving up the things that A, you're not good at, or B, you don't necessarily like doing. So part of, you know, we happen to live in an industry where somebody technically can do it all. And yet for some people, they realize they don't want to do it all and they're not the best at doing it all. So part of it is by you focusing on sales, or let's just say, you know, whatever part of the business it is, it frees up an opportunity for somebody who really loves the stuff that you don't like doing. Yep. And they're not going to ever want to do the stuff that you love doing. And so yep, that's where the power of leverage comes in, is you're more happier doing half of it. Let's just say we split it in half. You're happy over here doing this half. They're happy over here doing that half, and you're both going to get better along the way at it. So that's the power of leverage helping you to achieve your goals.
And that's really part of defining what makes you the most amount of money and what really amplifies your skill set and letting go of the rest, right? So if we know that a doctor, you know, who makes $500,000 a year is not going to be the guy who picks up the phone when you call, is not going to be the guy that, you know, takes your blood pressure when you come in. We know that they're there to see as many patients as possible in a kind of a critical 5 to 10 minute window, right? For most of us, you know, in our age group, we go see the doctor, you know, once a year, maybe twice if we have to, and we're there in and out in 5 minutes, because that's what the doctor's 20% is, right? That's what that experience and that training has got them, the opportunity to take their 20% and let go of everything else. The same thing exists across our industry and many other industries. It's just that, you know, the thing that I find about a lot of other industries is that they don't define and adjust quickly. right? How many times have we waited on contractors or, you know, somebody who to come work on our house who they don't have a receptionist, they have a cell phone and their voicemail is always full. I'm thinking, how many, you know, jobs could that person have lined up for the next month with somebody who just does strictly amazing communication and billing? Mm-hmm. And now the contractor can go do what they do. Plumbers plumb, electricians wire houses, right? It's no different. It's just defining and strategically moving along.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So getting back to kind of the buckets or the layers that we've experienced. So we've got a real estate sales team of which I'm a part of, right? We have the team ownership, right? We've also gotten into a few rental properties. I don't have a billion of them. I just have a couple duplexes, but we've seen some good net growth and some income off of there. We've also been able to participate in profit share. In the past, I've been a MAPS coach, right, which is a sister company to Keller Williams. I don't do that anymore. And then I've also had the opportunity to earn in on a couple other businesses that are related to real estate, but in the category. So you can see immediately, you know, they say the average person needs 7 sources of income. Well, immediately out of the gates, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, right? And I have been at one point, I think I had 10 in the same layers. But what we did is we got rid of the bottom third because they weren't producing the highest return on investment.
Yeah.
So now we can focus more heavily on our real estate business and our real estate sales and really put the pedal down on kind of that top 20%,
mm-hmm.
which helps us grow even faster.
Yeah. And I think too, what's really nice being in real estate is because there's so many opportunities, like you said, it's not like you're, you know, starting some side business where you're like, you know, drop shipping Amazon items for people that they buy. You know, it's like everything's within the sweet spot. So for you, when you're out there doing your daily job of being a real estate agent and somebody wants to list their house with you, there's a potential for a rental there, right? So you get a chance to look through that lens. And in other industries, it's called insider trading, which is illegal and you can't do that. Here, you get a chance to, you know, you have all this expert information, being a real estate local market professional, and you can decide, does this fit where I want my future to be? And so you just happen to have accumulated a few investment properties along the way, and you can make that intentional where you're actively searching them out, or it could be passively where you just let your team know, like, hey, this is kind of the sweet spot I'm looking for. If you've got anything that fits that, let me know. But it's not you having to close off everything you're doing over here to then move over here. And yep. And you had mentioned too, you know, some of the other real estate businesses that you're an investor in. It's not like that takes all your daily time where it's like, I can't do my day job because I've got to do this. It's all, everything flows vertically where you can still be in all these different buckets without having to massively adjust your time or your focus.
Well, it's leverage,
mm-hmm.
right? It may not be the, you know, something that I spend a lot of time on. Like even let's use my rental properties, for instance. I don't hire an outside manager, right? I do everything with the use of technology. I use Cozy.co and they pay online. They could submit repair requests online. I can take new applications and screen people online. And it's very user-friendly. And very easy to do. And it gives me the opportunity to be not only objective in who I hire or who I lease to, right? Mm-hmm. But gives us to not be in front of them all the time, not be the naggy landlords. It automatically sends them, you know, rent is due today, you know, click here to pay, and we'll link right to their bank account. Well, that's a piece of technology leverage that is free to me, but frees me up of, you know, I would say, you know, 5 hours a month, maybe, and just in bookkeeping and all that. And then, you know, like we talk about the layers, each of those boxes can have their own layer. So going back to the rental properties again, you know, we have, you know, cash flow that comes in every month. We've got depreciation that we can experience on our taxes. We've got appreciation, you know, increasing value in a rising market. And then we've got principal reduction that happens every month along the way. So there's you know, little dropdowns in multiple buckets that don't always have to be this huge, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 investment here, but it's making sure that making those little investments work for you and grow over time into something that's big.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I remember doing the math on that because we have a rental property and I remember when we had refinanced our mortgage when rates were really good, and I was looking at the principal reduction on that mortgage. And so it was something where tangibly in my head, I remember it was, you know, at the time, you know, $350 a month or something like that. And I remember thinking like, that's exciting because I know every month that passes that you continue to have somebody in that property, it's $350 that, you know, you could decide if I didn't have a rental property, my paycheck comes in, I take $350 and I go put it in a separate account that eventually I'm going to use to acquire some sort of asset. Or here it just kind of happens as a natural byproduct. And so it's kind of like you're paying yourself a little bit over time. And when you've got all those different areas within a rental property, it's a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here. And that really adds up when you're holding it for 1, 2, 5, 10 years. Yep. You know, and then, you know, we refinance from a 30-year mortgage down to a 20-year mortgage. Well, now we just lop 10 years off of the debt. Eventually that's going to get paid off. And our cash flow was pretty close to break even. And yet to go from a 30-year to a 20-year was a big difference because now that principal reduction is kicking off at a much faster rate.
Absolutely. Now, you know, I'm not suggesting that, you know, we look for layers and in whatever we're going to do and just stay in that one column. Obviously, you know, the one downside to me being, you know, heavily invested across multiple buckets of the real estate realm is if we experience another, you know, downshift in the market, right? What happens there? Well, I also realize that it's a long-term game for me. So I'm not playing the buy low, sell high, you know, I don't have that mentality, but I do still, you know, I have life insurance. I contributed towards a Roth or a SEP. I have, you know, an HSA, an IRA that I can potentially use to purchase other rental properties. So, you know, do yourself a favor in looking at having some strategic avenues within your plan that are maybe a little bit more secure and a little bit more long-term in diversifying. But, you know, really don't focus solely on, you know, what is putting $200 a month into a Roth going to do for me long-term, right? We need to think outside the box and how we can layer to have multiple sources of income based upon what we're doing currently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So digging in a little bit more to the rentals then, because I know that seems to be the one where people don't really necessarily know where to start, right? Like it's not like, hey, somebody happened to just give me, you know, 50 grand to put as a down payment on something. So what am I going to do for it? How do you turn that little bit into something big, like an investment property, not only for you personally, but maybe for people that you know that are doing investments? How does that typically start for them in terms of identifying a property, or maybe it's first identifying financially what you need to do to be able to execute on the right property when you find it?
Yep. Yeah. So, for those of you who do not currently listen to the Bigger Pockets podcast, that is a great resource for somebody looking at starting with their own rental properties, because there's so many different avenues that you could go even within purchasing rental properties, right? Or you know, do you buy and flip? Do you use the BRRRR strategy, right? Do you buy and hold? Do you, you know, go multifamily versus single family? So I think there's a few things that you really need to do to start. Number one is you need to define your criteria, okay? And define what we call your buy box. Because how many times have you heard it, Mike, somebody say, well, I'd love a rental property, but they don't really know what that means. Mm-hmm. Is it a $2 million apartment complex? Or is it your grandma's house that she's moving out of that hasn't been updated since 1958, mm-hmm. right? There's a big gap between those things. So defining what you want in the areas that you want and starting to research what they can rent for, So, you know, personally, I like small multifamily properties. I don't really want to have to hire a property manager unless I were to buy something that was, you know, bigger and necessitated that. So I wanted to be able to use the small technologies, you know, to have leverage in my business, but not necessarily, you know, remove large chunks of that cash flow like a lot of property managers tend to do. Now, if I can tell you this, if I worked a normal, you know, 9-to-5 job or, you know, a professional career in another industry, but happen to have rental properties, there's no shame in getting a property manager. I would absolutely do that myself, right? But being in the industry, I already have such an inside knowledge on it that I just wanted to be able to do that, because now I can create a relationship with my tenants and potentially even turn them into clients to help my real estate business, right? And see that cycle. So
I have too many vendors that you're working with, you know, in terms of handyman, you know, AC stuff, you know, any of that type of stuff that comes up along the way, those are the same people you're going to refer to your real estate clients with your rental properties as well. So your same relationship can be used in multiple avenues as well. You don't have to make a new friend of somebody that, you know, that does a great job at putting in new carpets, because you already know somebody from your real estate business, and now they can do it on your unit instead of somebody else's unit. So you still have those same relationships. That's leverage in a different way too.
100%. Couldn't agree more. So define your buy box, because once you clearly know what you're seeking, you don't have to make the decision to purchase it. You've already told yourself that the opportunity will be purchased when it arises, right? Because I see so many people go in and they go in and they see an opportunity and they hem and they haw and they try and analyze this and then they try and analyze that, and they overcomplicate it to a point where they miss a great opportunity because they didn't clearly define the criteria that would make them buy it. Because then it either becomes you buy it or you don't, not is this a good deal? Is this an okay deal? Is it a great deal? Or don't buy it, right? It just removes the complication. Number two, figure out what you can afford. If you cannot afford to make that monthly payment on your own for at least a few months out of the year, you need to seriously, you know, think about just going into a different asset class temporarily until you, you know, have enough reserves, or, you know, have enough of a down payment where, you know, you're going into it in a solid enough cash position where you are comfortable. So if you can line up your financing and your criteria, when the opportunity arises, you got to go for it, because now you know that you can make a sound decision in making that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And two, I mean, there's lenders that you already have relationships with that, you know, if you're looking to have somebody help with the mortgage or whatever versus just paying in cash, like you've got those same relationships of people that you can talk to. And those lenders also have certain buy boxes too, in terms of what do they like to go after in terms of investment property. So networking with lenders is a great way too to find out how much do I need to save, you know, to be able to buy that first rental property.
And I mean, and I get it. You know, I help people do it all the time, and even understanding it personally, I know that the more clearly you can define what you're looking for, the easier it'll be to make that decision, because, you know, I see people hem and haw, and I did it even, you know, I missed out on a few opportunities in the first couple of years that I was looking, and then the right opportunity hit the market and I bought it. Mm-hmm. And what that actually led to was I was outside throwing out some mouse traps, right? Or just some of those exterior boxes. And I saw the neighbor working on his. And I asked him, I said, would you ever consider selling it? And he said, absolutely not. This is my retirement plan. And I said, good for you. If you ever consider selling, call me first. And I sent him a little card. I took his information, just sent him a text saying, thank you. And I knew what I was doing. He maybe didn't, but I knew that with him working on that property, every time he pounded a nail or every time he cleaned those gutters, he was thinking, what a pain in the butt, right? So I knew that if there was ever a choice or an option for him to throw up his hands and say, take it over, that I was going to be the guy to call. And what happened is a week later, he called me and said, I think you should come make me an offer.
So he went from not interested, this is my retirement, to 1 week later, you're not my guy. Interested.
Yep. And that was it. And I knew what the rents could be and were going to be. I knew that they had, you know, tenants in there. Of my four units, I've only turned over one tenant in 3 years. And that was the first month that I owned the first property. And the second unit, I actually was fortunate enough to have another source of passive income be my complete down payment, right? So now we take one asset class, right, of passive income, profit share in this case, and we apply it towards another asset class of real property. Now I know that, you know, my profit share earnings are now whatever comes in every month from Keller Williams, plus essentially the rental property income from that asset class that profit share was able to purchase for me.
So, mm-hmm. Yep. So you're able to just stack and build all
and,
the time.
And that's it. And I don't, to be honest, if you're looking for some, for a quick income, this probably isn't the right podcast or webinar to be listening to, right? Because personally, I'm diligent enough where I don't take a single dime out of any of my passive income earnings. I let them roll and grow and compound within each other. Mm-hmm. Now, is it hard? Absolutely, it's hard. Are there some days where I would love to just take, you know, a cash flow from one of the rental properties for the last 6 months and buy myself something nice? Absolutely. But if I intend to get where I'm going, I cannot afford to make small bad decisions to end up being a big bad decision in the future.
Yeah. And that's what we talk about, you know, freedom taking sacrifice. You're going to have to give something up in the short term. Your lifestyle could grow more significantly than it has if you just cashed out all that stuff or even half of that, you know, like I made an extra $1,000 a month, so I'm going to spend an extra $500 a month. Yep. But when you have that discipline to hold the line, that's where that long-term wealth is going to really grow and grow and grow because you made the decision to hold the line on your lifestyle.
Well, and it's, you know, I mentioned in the beginning, dad of three girls. I mean, I'm sure you can see the artwork and some of the pictures here in the back, the footprints. Like, give yourself that reminder. You know, tell yourself every day what you're doing it for. Review your goals. You know, have conversations with your wife about what it'll, or your significant other about what it'll mean when you can achieve them. Because if you don't know what you're fighting for, you're going to have a heck of a hard time fighting for it and being disciplined enough in the short term to see the benefit in the long term. Mm-hmm. And for those of you looking for a book, if you haven't read The Millionaire Next Door, please do. It just talks about, you know, some of the sacrifice and how a lot of the millionaires in this country are first generation millionaires. 80% of all millionaires in America are first generation. And I think a lot of people have a hard time digesting that because they see the Kardashians on TV and they see, you know, these, you know, silver spoon babies just growing up with whatever they want. When in reality, most people got there on their own volition and they did it by disciplining themselves in the short term to have financial freedom in the long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for you, if you're watching this or listening to this and your parents weren't millionaires, so then it has to be 100% for you to become a millionaire, right?
It's so
you got to go get it yourself.
Yep.
Yeah. So talk for a second, a little bit, just to touch on, you know, your real estate sales business and your team. Talk about how that's grown over time and how that's added to your income each month.
Well, I think, there's two sides to that, right? So, you know, as a solo agent, I would probably sell between 30 and 40 houses every year, and it was a good income, but I had all the stress. When I went on vacation, I was still picking up my phone and answering that. I did the high dollar work, and I also did the $15 an hour work. And having a team allowed me to take away a lot of the administrative stuff, which I wasn't very good at. I'm not a, you know, dot my I's and cross my T's type of guy, just naturally. But it allowed me to take my skill set and my knowledge base, which I had developed over the first two thirds, and help grow other people around me, right? I view my opportunity as a leader, right? In, like we talked about, success through and success with others before, my opportunity as a leader is in raising up other leaders around me, because your environment, more than anything else, will define your success as a business owner, right? So it's important to continue to surround yourself with big thinkers and help pour into those around you, because the more you can lift up those around you, the higher you have to rise to continue to lead them. So I viewed my opportunity in continuing to rise myself by raising up people around me. And we went from, you know, doing a, you know, 30 or 40 units to doing, you know, 60, 70, 80, 100, and what we should pass over 100 units this year, which means there's a lot of people making a lot of good money on my teams. And I earn a small percentage of each of those sales as well, provided we're profitable at the end of the month, which, mm-hmm. you know, we really have been. We've had some good months. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that anybody suffers. It just means that we all get better together.
Yeah. Yeah, and the key is for you, even if, let's say, your income stayed the same, moving from individual sales to having a team, your income may, if it did stay the same, it would be you have some time back, you're pouring yourself into the right activities, so you've got a happier Eric because you're not doing the things you don't like doing. So that's even if there was no net dollar gain, there is some reward to you in your lifestyle by doing that. And then the nice thing is if you continue to push down on that gas pedal, now your income will grow more than you had when you were on your own. And you also get all those additional benefits, and you've got a team of people pulling in the same direction as you. So as you grow over time, those people can still be a part of your world, and they can grow too. And their world can get bigger just through being in a strong relationship with you.
Completely agree, Mike. And very well said. You know, I'm, like we talked about your environment defining your success. The other thing that, you know, you need to think about is who are you surrounding yourself with that will intrinsically help you grow and intrinsically be, you know, help you get better. If you have a goal of, you know, making $50,000 a year passively by the time you retire, in addition to your retirement accounts or whatever, or even if it's just 50 passively, right? If you have a goal of, you know, 10 million net worth by the time you retire, find people who already embody what you seek and find a way to surround yourself with them. Take them out for coffee, ask them questions, be in relationships with these people, because we see it all the time, whether it's on the news or, you know, people we went to high school with, or, you know, you name it, right? Members of our family, even, who you surround yourself with will either bring you up or bring you down. And they say that you're the average of the top five people you surround yourself with, right? So if those people are making 20 grand a year, or if they're making 200 grand a year, you have the ability to choose that. And one will get you to your financial freedom, right? Much quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And they're helping you along the way because they're in that same boat. So they're probably thinking about the same things that you're thinking about. You know, there's probably other friends that you have that are doing investments, or colleagues that, you know, through work that are doing investments that you can talk to them. So you're also sharpening each other along the way and helping each other get to the same goal, whether your goal is 10 million, somebody else's goal is 20 million. That's irrelevant. It's the fact that you're pulling in the same direction, and you're helping and encouraging each other along the way and challenging how you think, how you act, how you respond to things. It's really going to make you a better person through being in relationship with them.
And that's the other thing is big thinkers ask big questions. And if somebody can question why you're doing something and help you understand that it might not be the best route for you to take, and help you identify some additional routes or some additional sources of information to grasp onto to help propel you, you know, that's worth its weight in gold. The same thing is with reading, right? Like, you know, we hear a lot of people say, when you read, you stand on the shoulders of those who went before you. So it just elevates you to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was listening to, or watching a video of an agent, and she was a newer agent, a couple years in the business recently. And she said, you know, one of the best pieces of advice I got when I was first starting out is find a top producer and don't ask them what they do, ask them how they think. because that's so different. You know, everybody's got a different flavor of how they do real estate, but if you ask them how they think, that really makes a big difference, because you're teaching yourself how to solve that puzzle to get where you want to go, versus just they did this, I do this, you know, and it may not lead the same results, but it's teaching them how to critically think, how to problem solve, and how to improve.
Yep. And I know, Mike, you know, some of the relationships that you and I have maintained over time, you know, whether it's been in, you know, coaches or even just, you know, small group settings, you know, we've had the opportunity together to be a part of some pretty dang good discussions, with some pretty high level thinkers. And I know for me, that's really, you know, been kind of a catalyst of stretching, you know, your mindset and stretching, you know, who you know and think you can become. And that's part of it. I think a lot of us have, you know, limiting beliefs. I sure as heck did, especially at the beginning on what we could accomplish, when big thinkers will flip that question and ask what you can't accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then looking at where you're at today, Eric, and thinking about the future, what's next for you, or what's kind of on that to-do list, or what you want to accomplish here between now and ultimately having that financial freedom? Where would you like to see yourself go?
Well, I think there's really two areas of improvement. Number one, in order for me to, you know, get to that level of income, I'll likely need to be at least 10 rental properties. So my intent is to, you know, acquire, at least, I'm at 4 doors now, however you want to, some people classify doors, some people classify, you know, units, some people classify entities altogether. I need to be at least probably 10 to 15 doors, or like 10 properties. So for me, it's really going to be hunting down the best deals, small multifamily. I would say anywhere from, you know, 2 to 12 units. I'd love to find something that's maybe a little bit bigger and help leverage that, right? Mm-hmm.
And then the other, what area are you looking in case anybody's watching this and happens to have that need for you?
Yeah, Wright County specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, where I'm comfortable with, Wright County, Minnesota. So the other thing is going to be, you know, helping my real estate team grow and helping them, you know, become better moms and dads and husbands and wives and better salespeople all over. So I think, you know, as I analyze my income currently, those are the two areas that have the biggest opportunities for growth and where I find myself strong suited. And so for me, it's really about, you know, kind of continuing to grow those and then taking the net income and pouring it back into some of the debt that exists on the rental properties.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we can take that cash flow and just, you know, put it towards the next one, or do, you know, like the debt snowball with that Dave Ramsey talks about on properties specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's going to be kind of a combination of growth and debt reduction to widen the gap, so to speak.
Great. Okay. Anything else that you can think of that you want to share that would be relevant for anybody watching or listening to this for success?
You know, Mike, I really take a look at your environment. I think the one thing that I can advise anybody on is, you know, have an afternoon where you just look around at who you're surrounding yourself with, at the information that's coming at you, whether it's positive or negative, and ask yourself if you are growing today. And ask yourself what it would look like 20 years from now, or 10 years from now, or whenever you do intend to achieve financial freedom. Ask if you can get there by doing what you're doing today. And if the answer is no, you know that you need to change your environment. Mike, I loved where I worked before I came to Keller Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it. I still talk to, you know, the owner of that brokerage on a weekly basis or biweekly, right? Amazing guy. But I knew that I wasn't growing into who I knew I could be and wanted to be. So I changed my environment and my success followed.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought, you know, if you had asked me this question, you know, 8 years ago or 6 years ago, you know, I never thought I would retire in real estate. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't. And now I'm wondering how quickly I can. Mm-hmm. So it's a change in mindset that was a result in changing the environment and being surrounded by big thinkers and big questions and ultimately, you know, the opportunity to ask myself what is possible. Mm-hmm. So analyze your environment, define what you want, and don't let anything get in the way.
Cool. All right. And then also as part of being a part of this, we want to give you a chance to give any plugs. So we know if you're in Wright County and you have potential rental properties to reach out to you, but what else would you like to plug while you're here?
Yeah. So we've got a sales team that operates out of the Buffalo, Minnesota and Otsego, Minnesota Market Center here. We've got some great agents and some great systems to help buyers and sellers achieve, you know, what they want when it comes to real estate transactions. The other thing is if you are looking at getting into real estate, you know, we've been very fortunate enough to help a lot of people discover and join Keller Williams. So if you have questions or have thought about being a real estate agent, feel free to give me a call. We'd love to introduce you to our team leader and show you the, you know, the values that Keller Williams embodies. And you know what Keller Williams has to offer you, the salesperson, to help your career skyrocket. So
awesome. And we'll make sure we put your contact information up there so people can reach out to you and get a hold of you for whatever they need.
Awesome. Thanks for the opportunity today, Mike.